Hi, my name is Emily Walker. I'm the Senior Manager of External Affairs at the Natural Areas Conservancy, and I am joined today by my colleague, Sophie. I'm going to let you introduce yourself.
Hello, my name is Sophie Plitt, and I'm the Senior Manager of National Partnerships at the Natural Areas Conservancy. And Emily and I are here today to talk a little bit about a new report called Funding Forests and Natural Areas, which looks at the way that cities across the U.S. are bringing more funding to the vital work of caring for and protecting forests in our cities.
Let's dive in.
Sounds good.
So my first question for you, Sophie, I would love to hear your thoughts on what are the benefits that urban natural areas provide, and how do they differ from other parts of the urban forest?
Yeah, so urban forests function as critical pieces of infrastructure in our cities, and they contribute meaningful results to public health and environmental benefits to everyone living in cities. Forest and natural areas, which are those spaces in the urban landscape that really look and feel like the woods, those spaces can provide benefits at higher rates than other parts of the urban forest. So they provide incredible cooling effects on hot days, and they also provide critical habitat for native plants and animals and safeguard biodiversity in our fragmented urban environment. They also mitigate the impacts of climate change by doing things like absorbing carbon dioxide and storing it in their leaves and wood, and also absorbing stormwater and cooling, which I already mentioned. And then finally, they provide incredibly important access to urban nature. And so people who live in cities often don't have the opportunity to be in wild nature. And these forested natural areas provide a nearby source of nature. And we've actually found that a lot of the folks who are visiting our forested natural areas, that's one of their only sources of nature. So these spaces are incredibly important for both of those ecological and social benefits.
Well, that all sounds fantastic. One would think, hearing all of those benefits laid out, that these would be like a really robustly funded part of our public open space network, but our report found that that's not necessarily the case. So I would love to know, from your perspective, what are some of the primary challenges that are faced in funding the care of our urban forested natural areas? And kind of a secondary question, like, how do those challenges impact the management and preservation of these spaces?
Yeah, so we worked with cities all across the U.S. to look at how these spaces are funded, and unfortunately found that they are consistently underfunded and often not able to perform the critical management functions that keep these forests accessible and thriving. So we found that across U.S. cities that we worked with, less than 4% of municipal park budgets on average are dedicated to caring for natural areas, despite them often making up at least half or even more than half of total parkland acreage in a given city. So why is this happening? We don't have a lot of data, but we've talked to our partners and can see some trends across these cities. So we found that both the public and the private sector often prefer to fund one-time investments or capital improvements like tree planting, rather than really investing in long-term multi-year maintenance, which is what these spaces really need. Furthermore, urban forests tend to be kind of misconceived or misunderstood by both the public and decision makers who are making these funding allocations. And there's kind of this belief that forests are self-maintaining, that they care for themselves. But we're talking about forests embedded in cities. They're highly disturbed and fragmented, and they require sustained investment in order to provide all of these amazing social and environmental benefits that we discussed. And then finally, urban forests are unfortunately often seen as undeveloped land, a place where you could, you know, build a shopping mall, a parking lot, a ball field. And while there are a lot of important ways to use land in cities, it's really important that we share the benefits of these forested natural areas so that they're understood as critical infrastructure and not kind of on the chopping block for development. Mm-hmm. So Emily, now I'm going to turn to you and your policy and funding expertise here in the context of New York City to ask what are some of the potential funding sources for urban forested natural areas, and how can cities leverage these sources to support conservation and management efforts?
It's a great question. I mean, I think here in New York City, one of the funding sources we rely on heavily for managing our urban forested natural areas comes from municipal funding, and primarily the expense budget for the city of New York, which I think is, you know, distinct from the capital budget, which is where we see funding come through for like new tree plantings, which is great. But to your point earlier, right, like a lot of this is about preserving the canopy that we have. And that takes people, power, and resources that come from the expense budget. I think here in New York, that's often a challenge to get the funding we need for that, but we can dive into that a little bit later in our conversation. But I think for a lot of cities, that's really where they're pulling likely a lot of the funding for the care and maintenance of these spaces. There's also state and federal grants that can be pursued for this work, but those tend to be one-time infusions of funding, and it can be kind of an onerous process. That being said, you know, cities, governments are generally set up to take advantage of some of these pots of funding. You know, I think last year we had the Inflation Reduction Act, which is a really significant moment. There was funding that came through the U.S. Forest Service through the Community and Urban Forestry Program, which was great. But again, there was a lot of need expressed in the applications that were submitted, and most projects didn't receive funding at all. And those that did receive funding didn't even get the amount that they needed. So we know there's a lot of untapped need in the sector across the country. And here on the state side, in New York, for instance, we have the Environmental Bond Act, which is really exciting. But one of the constraints of that is that it's capital funding, so it will go towards things like new tree plantings, but not really like the maintenance. So I think ways that a lot of cities are starting to plug the gaps, we're seeing more innovative funding being pursued either from the philanthropic sector, or some states have the ability to create kind of creative funding mechanisms that the public can weigh in on. Not every state has the ability to do that, but certainly those states that have that ability to kind of put it to voters, there have been some interesting mechanisms that have kind of come through. And I would love, as the expert on our team who works with cities across the country, I would love, Sophie, to hear about what are some of those possible approaches that cities can take to address this underfunding of our urban forested natural areas.
Absolutely. So I think one thing we've already touched on a little bit, but I want to say really clearly, is one of the most important approaches we can take to bringing more funding to forested natural areas is really through building partnerships and communicating with those partners and decision makers. So this starts with, you know, data and science and being able to quantify and highlight all of those incredible social and ecological benefits of natural areas, from their biodiversity to the mental health benefits to physical health benefits, and really underscore the value to both communities and policymakers. So clearly, explaining the ongoing need for maintenance funding is another really difficult but important task. We need our decision makers and our communities to understand what it takes to protect and keep these forests really healthy and thriving, and what that costs, and where that funding is going to go to really preserve the integrity of forests over time. The second approach is really building relationships with philanthropic community and bringing more private monies into natural areas conservation in cities. And this can come from everything from establishing maintenance endowment funds to providing reliable and sustainable sources of private funding for the ongoing care and maintenance of natural areas. And we're really thrilled to be able to cultivate relationships with the philanthropic community who really see the value of these forest and natural areas. And then finally, and something we'll give some examples of, is exploring some more innovative and new financing options outside of just municipal funding and grants, and look at things like the utilization of nature bonds, like you mentioned in New York State, and things like carbon credit markets that might provide a new source of funding that can be directed towards critical forest management and acquisition efforts.
It's exciting. Last year, NAC released a report that was focused on funding for our urban forested natural areas here locally in New York City. And we found that our forested natural areas haven't received a significant amount of resources in recent funding cycles. I think just to kind of put it in context, right, we know that in recent years, the overall budget for NYC parks across like every division, so that's like caring for playgrounds and basketball courts and natural areas, right, like this is, we're talking about like the entire pie for the parks budget, that's been hovering around like 0.6% of the entire city operating budget, which is not a lot. And then what our report found last year is that drilling down into the parks budget itself, the amount of funding that's going toward forest management is about 0.7% of the entire like operating budget for parks. And I know that you know, these numbers might sound a little wonky, but like to put it in perspective, like imagine all of our forested areas were in Central Park, there'd be like what, 2 or 3 people working there with that level of funding. So it's not enough, knowing that we have so many urban forested natural areas in our city parkland here in New York. So I would love to hear from you, like kind of setting the table and knowing everything we know about how little has been funded in New York City. What are some of the lessons that you think other cities that aren't New York can like bring to bear, right, as we look to increase the amount of funding that's allocated to forest management both here in New York but also beyond?
Absolutely. I think one key lesson learned from some of the case studies that are outlined in this new report about how other cities have brought new sources of funding to forest and natural areas is getting creative about funding sources and really looking outside the constraints of the municipal budget cycle. So this can take a lot of different forms, whether it's looking at some of these more innovative funding sources or working to create new streams of municipal funding. So one example that I want to share with you, which I think has been incredibly transformative, is from the city of Portland, Oregon. So back in 2019, after over a year of public outreach and really building on a legacy of partnerships with local conservation partners, the Portland Metro Council actually put forth a local ballot measure that Portland residents voted on. That was a parks and nature bond with provisions for 25 years of funding and totaling $475 million in general obligations bonds. And this is actually the third parks and nature bond measure that's been passed in Portland. So they were really building on a legacy of winning over voters and making the case to the public to obligate funds to these important causes. So we were thrilled to hear that in 2019 and 2020, this bond passed with a 60% majority, and they now have millions of dollars to allocate for projects like land restoration to improve water quality and fish and wildlife habitat, to improve trails, and to even implement large-scale community vision projects in Portland, Oregon's local natural areas. So I think the lesson learned here is that if you're able to really quantify the financial needs of urban forested natural areas and communicate those to the public, and contextualizing those needs within municipal budgeting contexts over time, you can galvanize public support for natural areas and help catalyze change. I think the other lesson learned is that building local partnerships within the broader green space movement and looking outside even just the parks, open space, or natural resource world to other sectors for partnership can really help move what is sometimes seen as more of like a niche green space need into a broader conversation about municipal infrastructure and green space.
That's amazing.
Emily, I'm curious, what are some ways that you think everyday residents of cities could help move this work forward and help advocate for more funding for our forested natural areas?
I love this question, and I feel so inspired hearing what you shared about what's happening in Portland. Like, I think it's really fantastic when cities have the ability to kind of put these efforts out to the public in a way that both educates the public about the need for those resources, why it's important, gives them kind of the contextualization that's needed, because I think like municipal budgets are really wonky, and it's not something that we're really, I think, taught as citizens of our cities. to really understand. So, you know, I'm a big proponent of, you know, if you want to see change happen in your community, you've got to start kind of from the ground up, like understand, like, how does your city operate its budget cycle? Here in New York, right, the timing is a little bit wonky and the public may not realize that it's actually a process that plays out like in the first 6 months of every year, because our budget cycle begins July 1st and ends June 30th. So there's a really critical moment in time when the public has the ability to help shape what makes it into the final budget. And that's not unique to New York City. So I think, you know, first and foremost, I recommend that like anyone try to like understand, how does your city function? How does it make budget decisions? What is that time frame and cycle? And when are those key moments when you, as a member of the public and as a taxpayer, you know, can say your piece about what you want to see funding? Funded. And I think, you know, to that end, also connecting with your local elected officials is really key. They need to hear from us about what we think our priorities are. So if the urban forest is something that is really important to you, like, you should be reaching out to your local council member to tell them that, right? We're all represented by elected officials that technically work for us. They win their seats by our votes, but they still report to their constituents. And I think hearing from folks that live in their districts is really, really powerful. And again, that's not unique to New York City. That's every city in the country. Like, elected officials should be hearing from folks who care about these issues. And I think, you know, we're a place that's bound to election cycles, and that's another important moment to really engage folks who are running for office and who are aspiring to represent your community, like ensuring that parks and green space and the urban forest becomes a priority for folks who are seeking elected office in the first place. So showing up to local candidate forums, asking those questions about how would you fund our parks and green spaces and our urban forest. I think the more that we kind of engage in that process moving forward, the more that folks who win these seats have to pay attention to the issue and understand that it's a priority. So I think, you know, those are really some of the ways that I've seen be effective, even at like a local level, but it really starts with constituents not being afraid to speak up to those who are in power, because they work for us, right? So make sure that they know that parks and green spaces should be a priority.
Absolutely. That's really well put, Emily, and feels really inspiring for you to state it in such a powerful way. You know, we have the power and our elected officials work for us. And it makes me want to ask our final question here, which is, what makes you feel most optimistic about the future of forest and natural areas? And I want to hear from you, and then I'll share some thoughts too.
I think when I consider this question, what comes to mind for me is like stewardship. Mm-hmm. And just seeing people come out into parks and the urban forest more. I feel like the pandemic really, for a lot of folks throughout this country, highlighted just how important and critical parks and open space are. I think for those of us who work in the sector, we always knew that. We always cared about it. But for folks who maybe kind of took it for granted, like having that local park and green space at a time when so many other resources were unavailable to the public really showed people that these are places that matter, that provide a really critical like public and mental health benefit. You know, I remember seeing so many articles about people being like stunned by the bird song they could hear at the beginning of the pandemic, and just like that reconnection with nature that I think a lot of us who live in cities, it's so easy to kind of cut yourself off from that. So to kind of like tap into that like wonder and awe that you can find when you're in a space that doesn't feel like the city, and where you're maybe seeing birds or other wildlife or plants that you'd never noticed before, I think is really important. And I think because people started to appreciate that, they started to figure out ways that they could help. And I think that's something that's really exciting, and I hope will continue. People seem really energized around learning how to care for the street trees on their block, or how to volunteer in their local park to help kind of reverse some of the negative conditions that can occur from really heavy use. Like there's pros and cons to a lot of people loving their parks, right? So I think that for me is one of the most exciting takeaways, that people are understanding that parks are really like a gem that makes living in a city possible, right? But what about you? I would love to hear what makes you feel optimistic.
I think one thing I'm noticing is as the tangible impacts of climate change are becoming more and more apparent in our daily life, like extremely hot summers, more frequent and severe storms, more flooding. Obviously, those things don't make me feel very optimistic, but tuning into the fact that people are really seeing the impacts that nature and natural areas have as a solution to climate change has been really inspiring. And seeing people elevate the status of nature as this powerful solution and also a source of respite during this unprecedented time of a changing climate has been incredibly powerful. And I hope we continue to really leverage that message and elevate our natural areas and cities as one of our most powerful solutions to climate change.
It's always a pleasure to talk shop with you, Sophie.
Same here, Emily. Great conversation. And here's to bringing some more funding to our city's vital natural areas.
Yes.